This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, covering Ipswich Town since 2015. I'm Craig Fimbo and you're tuned into the pre-match show, open brackets, Fleetwood home, close brackets. And we are in partnership with the Greyhound Ipswich, and we are available each week on video and podcast. Joining me this week, as usual, in his usual slot, is Seb Brown. And for those of you who are listening and who aren't quite as eagle-eyed YouTube visitors, we have a guest appearance for the first time this season, our very, very, very good friend, TWTD's Phil Ham. How are you guys?
Fine, thank you. You well?
Yeah, good to see you, Phil. Good to see you. Been a while since your groundbreaking and very popular interviews you did with Ben a few weeks back.
Yeah, Kieran Dyer and Alan Lee, I thought they both went down, both interviews went down very well, very interesting. We've got other ones coming up, so watch this space relatively soon.
Yeah, nicely done. And how are you, Seb?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Still buzzing after Tuesday night and really looking forward to Fleetwood now.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, well, I say what we'll do, we'll touch upon Portsmouth and then as Rich and yourself normally do, we'll go through the opponents for this weekend. Now, in terms of bits and pieces we've got, we better go through what very little news there was subsequent to the Portsmouth match. I'd better play Rich's bumper. There we go. So we'll start with two bits of exciting sponsorship news. Now, earlier in the week, it was announced that Blue Monday is sponsoring ITFC women's pro and central midfielder, Abby Lafayette, for the remainder of the 21-22 season. And we'll be speaking to her during the course of the season on how things are going. On the back of that, top of the league ITFC women face Bridgewater United after a two-week break, and it's going to be probably their real first test of the season. No judgment to the people they've played so far, but Bridgewater, I believe, are third in the league, obviously behind Ipswich and Southampton. And it being a home game, the game will be at Felixstowe and Walton's Gold Star Ground on Sunday. Kickoff 2 p.m, £5 entry for adults, and I believe your kids get in for free. And you'll see the great and the good of Ipswich Town supporters there. It's getting more and more popular, and I say no doubt, I think Rich and Dave are heading that way. Secondly, our own equally exciting sponsorship news is that this pre-match show and all our pre-match shows from here on are now supported by our very good friends at the Greyhound, the only Ipswich venue to head to for your pre- and post-game chit-chat for every town match. It's an Adnams pub, so, you know, you've got good beer. It's got a good beer garden. It's got good food. I can thoroughly recommend the Mosaic and the Nachos. My boy can recommend the Chili Burger. I know, Seb, I've spotted you in there a couple of times as well. It's a decent venue, and it's a good little partnership we've got ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely superb. God, I've been going there for years. There was a solid sort of 5 to 7 year period where the beers in the Greyhound at midday till 2 o'clock, and then from 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock were by far the best parts of a Saturday. It was always the football in the middle that really, really used to ruin the day. So no, absolutely cracking pub. Everyone get yourselves down there. The beer garden's fantastic now. It's all been kitted out with the booths and stuff. And yeah, absolutely superb place to go.
So the two hours before were to numb the pain, and the 4 hours afterwards were just to forget about it. The subsequent 2 hours of football, yeah?
Exactly, yeah, to sit there and recap on the 0-0 draw.
And if I were a polished professional, I'd seamlessly segue between greyhounds and racehorses, but I'm not.
Professional level. Who needs Rich Woodward?
We'll have a vote on that later, shall we, along with the Room 101. I'm not saying it's been a quiet news week, but the only other bit of news I've got is that Jay Tabb is going to ride a racehorse at Wincanton on Sunday. words I probably never thought I'd be saying, but it's a charity do. Phil's had a story on it in the last day or so. As I say, it's for charity. He's got a Just Giving page. So if you want to take a look at Phil's news story, you can get the latest on that. Pretty much it in terms
of news. He's a kind of renaissance man of sport, isn't he, Jay Tabb? Because I think when he stopped playing, he was a good golfer, I think.
Yeah, he's off scratch, wasn't he?
He played in, the Pro-Am thing at Wentworth, is it, that they have sort of prior to one of the major tournaments? He played in
that BMW thing, I think it is.
And then when he retired from football, he went and played rugby union with his cousins, I think, in Wimbledon. I think it was somewhere like that. And then he got this interest in horse racing, and he's been working at Philip Hobbs stud in Somerset somewhere for the last 2 years. We had him on Life's a Pitch at one point talking about it. He's got no kind of real ambition to be a jockey as such, but there's this charity event that they do every year, and Michael Owen rode in it at one point, and he's got the nod to go in it this year. So good luck to him. Lovely fellow, Jay Tabb. A lot of time for him.
Well, he's certainly living his best life, isn't he? You know, he's not letting the grass grow under his feet, is he, since retirement? As you say, he's thrown himself into most things that he always wanted to do. So, yeah, fair play to the guy.
Yeah.
So in terms of news, that's pretty much what we've got. But it would be very remiss of us not to to reflect again on the match midweek. And obviously, Seb, yourself and Rich went through it pretty much instantaneously as the final whistle was blowing on Tuesday night. But, you know, again, I'll ask you for your thoughts on it. And Phil, obviously, you know, you were there reporting on it for TWTD. And on a night when a lump of cheese was allegedly thrown at Paul Cook, we managed to find more holes than a block of Emmental in the Portsmouth defence. From about 40 minutes onwards, when Macaulay Bond did his Marcus Stewart impression, Paul Cook called it as complete a performance as we've had this season. He's pretty much right, isn't he, Phil, in that respect?
Well, it's complete in the sense that it was sort of over the 90 minutes, I suppose, what he means. Or rather, having got in front, we took it on and won the game comfortably. I think someone pointed out that we've been ahead at half-time. That was the sixth away game in a row we'd been ahead at half-time, which is a remarkable stat, isn't it? I can't imagine that's ever happened in the club's history before, to be honest. Maybe in the Robson era or the Ramsey era, but but we'd only, prior to Tuesday, only won two of those games. Obviously, Cambridge on Saturday was a case in point, really, that that we'd got that game won, hadn't we? 2-0. And we allowed the opposition to get back in it. And then I think it was a mindset thing Saturday. I don't know what your sort of discussions have been about that, that we seem to kind of let them come on to us rather than sort of playing the game that had got us to the position we were in, which certainly wasn't the manager's intention, was it? Because the manager made attacking substitutions and didn't invite pressure, or the intention wasn't to invite pressure. So, and then, of course, we then found ourselves in a very similar position at Portsmouth a few days later. We're 1-0 up. And actually, I thought our performance was drifting a bit at 1-0. Well, sort of once, just before 1-0, I thought we'd started off reasonably well. And they'd been there'd been one chance, hadn't there, which Marcus Harness put wide for them. And we'd not really had anything, had we? And then Macaulay Bonn seems to have this habit of sort of, I don't know, not bullying, but kind of just pressuring keepers into making grievous errors. And I don't know because Gavin Bazunu is a really good goalkeeper, isn't he? I think he's going to be Ireland number one for some years to come, I think. We saw how good he was with Rochdale last year, and whether the wind took the ball away from him, and he seemed to sort of, he was going to kick it, and then he sort of changed his mind and cut back inside. Now, because it was really windy, I don't know whether this sort of came across necessarily. Yeah, it was only really when we got down on the pitch at the end that we kind of noticed quite how windy it was. But whether the wind took the ball away from him, he changed his mind, and Macaulay Bond's fantastic in that situation, really, wasn't it? One, to win the ball. Two, then to kind of reach it on the touchline, then have the presence of mind to take that touch inside to sort of a goalkeeper going sliding past him in a almost sort of comedic fashion, and then to lash it. It was a really, really good goal, wasn't it? But there was a lot to do at that point, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, that's the surprise thing, because when the keeper had the ball initially, he had a guy left of him, didn't he? It was either the left back or the left centre half was 5 yards away, just to his left, but for whatever reason, decided not to lay it that way and cut back inside.
Presumably. It's funny that the fans made them a bit nervy in that moment, because they were passing it backwards and forwards, weren't they, at the back? And I think one of the centre, it might have been Raggett, sort of passed it back to the keeper. And the keeper was kind of out of his ground, and there was this kind of momentary kind of wonder whether it was actually going in to start with. You know what I mean? He'd overhit the back pass where the sort of beyond the goalkeeper anyway. So there's a, and I wonder whether that sort of, you know, kind of translated itself onto the pitch and made the keeper a bit more nervy. And of course he had a bit of a howler at the weekend as well.
Yeah.
Well, the goal, I think it was the second goal for Rotherham, that he was a relative easy one. He dropped it and then it was followed up from there. So he was probably a bit nervy due to that as much as anything else anyway. But at half time, really, we still had a lot to do, didn't we? I thought it wasn't a fait accompli by any stretch of the imagination. I think that, you know, you'd probably, of the two, you'd have thought that Cambridge was the game that was the easy one to see out from that position.
Yeah. What was quite evident, I thought, the first half an hour, certainly, or first quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, was that we weren't mucking about at the back on Tuesday. We were getting it clear, you know, we were getting it up the pitch away from our danger area, if nothing else, presumably just to keep the crowd quiet and keep, you know, to dampen things down a bit, just keep it away from our goal for the first 15, 20 minutes, work your way into the game. And as you said, Phil, it wasn't, a 0-0 at half time wouldn't have been a particularly unfair result.
No, not at all.
There wasn't an awful lot of quality flying around, was there, in the first half? It was a pretty pretty ropey first half, if all things considered. But obviously, it gets masked by the second half, didn't it, Seb, where it went, we went a bit goal crazy. And, you know, our friend Danasian was not only defending well, but coming up with his assist as well.
Yeah, absolutely superb, wasn't it? What was great, obviously, we seem to have faded, like Phil just said, we've been ahead so many times at halftime and stuff, and we just seem to fade in the second half of games, don't we? At the start of the season, we were saying it was fitness, and then we were saying, is there like a mental fragility? But it was great the way we just kept on going. Danasian was bombing forward like I've seen things on Twitter comparing him, calling the Caribbean Cafu and stuff, and it was absolutely superb play from him, wasn't it? And we just absolutely took them to bits, and it was, the second goal was clinical, obviously. That was the really lovely finish by Chaplin, just stroked into the far corner back at his old club. And then after that, you know, we just, the keeper has a howler for the third one, and the final one, Nassian again bombing forward, picks out Burns lovely, and he slots home, and the crowd had turned at that point. And it was just great to see that we, you know, we not only did we see the game out in the the 10, 15 minutes after half time, but we kept going. Things didn't drop. People didn't seem to lose fitness or anything. And it was an absolutely superb performance. But what's crucial, given the drop points on Saturday, is that we really look to follow up now, isn't it, on Saturday against Fleetwood?
Yeah. It was sort of an ideal scenario for Paul Cook, in that he's already told us he wants to make attacking substitutions when we're ahead and then just keep the impetus going, doesn't it? And this was the textbook ideal match for him. It just all clicked and it all worked exactly how he wanted it.
Yeah. I was going to say about, but he's talking about Janoi Dunassian being so far forward. Second, that was exactly the opposite at Cambridge, wasn't it? We kind of retreated and we weren't pushing, fullbacks weren't pushing forward. We weren't keep moving the game up the pitch in that way. We were kind of just sort of inviting pressure. And that was something, again, yeah, I think mindset, sort of mentality, there just seemed to be, I think the fact that we scored on 54 and 58 minutes, I think that kind of,
not the stuffing out of them, didn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely not the stuffing out of them. They're on a terrible run anyway. They conceded four Saturday as well, didn't they? And so heads just dropped, and that was that, wasn't it? There was absolutely no way back from there. And I think we perhaps needed that sort of performance away from home, because there's that sort of jitteriness about us. And perhaps we are getting to, I agree with what you were saying about talking about lack of fitness and things. The number of times after games Paul Cook's talked about a player and he said, well, yes, he's had a hard pre-season because he's had COVID or he's had an injury. And he must have said that about several players, yeah. Probably about half the squad that have had pre-season interrupted for one season or another, or a pre-season that kind of was or they weren't in pre-season until they joined us relatively late in the summer. Like Kyle Edwards, for example, I don't think was at a club until he was sort of flitting around from on trial at various places, wasn't he? And so yeah. I think it's taken quite a few players a little while to get up to speed. And perhaps we're showing signs of play, well, Connor Chaplin being an example of it. He didn't have a proper pre-season as such, and he's now kind of got to, I think he said the game at Gillingham was his first 90 minutes, and now he's sort of really established himself in that number 10 role for the moment, of course, until someone else comes in, because it is remarkable that we're talking about winning 4-0 away from home, and Bersant Salina came on for the last 5 minutes or so, didn't he, who's probably seen as our most dangerous player by many people, I would guess.
Well, this is it, and you know, I don't think you'd have got many people taken up, you know, given the opportunity to decide what their first 11 would be, would have Sonny Aluko in it alongside Dunassian and Nsiala. And, you know, I appreciate Nsiala's been in only for the last match, but for Aluko and Dunassian to be two of our standout performers, really, in terms of the last two or three games. I've been very impressed with Aluko.
I can say Aluko is probably one of our highest profile signings over the summer. Because, you know, you look at his CV is probably as impressive as anybody. Maybe Salina, having started out at Manchester City. Other than that, really, I think he's probably the one that's sort of done the most in the game. But obviously, he's the one who's 32 as well, so has had a chance to do that. But I think he obviously had a difficult start against Newport. But again, he's another one who wasn't with a club until he joined us.
Exactly. Yeah. He was at Derby and everywhere else, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think sort of George Edmondson was another one who, I think when he joined the club, he'd had an injury over pre-season, and I don't think he played for 4 weeks after he joined us, did he? And that was not so much the injury, but getting him fit, getting him up to speed before he kind of got up and running. And I think that's been the case with a lot of them, and perhaps we're finally seeing that happening now. I mean, the other thing, you look at the other big result we've had, Doncaster. I mean, we followed that up with the Accrington defeat with exactly the same 11. Well, you wonder how much that was impacted by the fact that the players were, you know, not as fit as they should be at that stage and not able to play two games in however many days it was. And whereas Tuesday, Paul Cook made a few changes from the 11 on Saturday. Even though for most of that game we were well on top, he made a few changes. And I think perhaps he's feeling more that, because I think he is of that old school, isn't he? You don't change a winning team. He said that on a number of occasions. But at the same time, I think he's perhaps realizing that there is that you may have to more often than perhaps he would like, because players are not perhaps as fit as he would like them, and that and obviously he's got a squad that he can do that with,
and he's probably got a a raft of sports scientists and people behind him who are telling him that, you know, it might be sensible to do such a thing as well.
Yeah. I think they, you know, with their iPads on the touchline, I think, you know, sort of pointing out load and all this kind of thing, and who might come off that kind of situation. I think it is sort of as stark as that.
And what's great as well is those squad guys. Sorry, Craig. Those squad guys obviously come in, and there's no drop off, is there, in terms of performance and stuff? It's great. And in the past, we've seen big players drop out of the side, and we simply never had the options in the squad to replace them effectively, which would lead to a poor team performance or a dodgy run of results. But this year, you know, you rest Wes Burns against Cambridge. His replacement scores two goals, makes himself undroppable. Scores in the next game. It's great. There's no noticeable drop off now because the squad is so healthy in those kind of places.
And also during matches as well, as Wes Burns comes on during a match, does he? There's no let up. You look at our bench, and there were, you know, occasions last year where you look at the bench and think, oh, crikey, you know, if we lose XYZ, it's going to be a decent drop off. But, you know, you really cannot see much. They're all much of a mattress on the bench. And it literally is, well, hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, from now on, it's going to be a case of tactical replacements to replace what's already there, just to keep that momentum going, rather than, you know, obviously we'll get injuries here and there. But in terms of Paul Cook, he said afterwards, you know, you don't get medals in October, there's no promotions, there's no relegations, but you can go a long way to giving up automatic promotion in October if you're not picking up those results. You know, teams at the top, they're not letting up much, are they?
No, but I take his point, and he obviously tries to kind of put a lid on that sort of thing, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? When he was talking a lot about, you know, when the going's trying to keep on an even keel, whether we're doing well or whether we're doing badly, despite the fact he was grinning his head off on Tuesday night and having been sort of, you know, looked fairly down in the dumps after a few matches, which, you know, unsurprising. Managers are people too, aren't they? And, but yeah, you can lose a season in October, can't you, to some degree? Yeah. But you can I think there's plenty of time. I mean, this sort of discussions of kind of, have we given ourselves enough time to reach the top two or whatever? I mean, we're 5 points in the playoffs. I mean, that's just, you know, is easily done, isn't it? And the top two, I think you just have to look back at the past few seasons, really, that teams that have been at the top have tended to fall away in most cases. Us being one of the most notable people clubs that have done that. But Lincoln last year, I thought Lincoln were going into the latter stage of the season looking very strong, and they drifted away from the automatic areas. And I think that's, I mean, if one of the sides at the top at the moment carries on as they are, I think they're going to thoroughly deserve promotion, because they're going to be on 100 and so many points, aren't they? If they're carrying on in the manner that they are at present. So, but I think there's plenty of time, and I think we've known, because of all the changes over the summer, that it was going to be a build, that it was going to take some time. I don't think we anticipated it being a slower start as it has been, but, I think we always kind of anticipated that we'd be chasing rather than the team to be chased. I think we do have, we'd win. It's one of those things. If we'd have won the first two games, which again, you know, most games have been settled one goal. Most of the games we've lost or drawn, you know, most of the games we've lost, it's been one goal either way, hasn't it? We've not really been kind of, with the exception of Bolton, we've been fairly kind of, they've been fairly close games. And if we'd have got a couple of early wins, you could have seen us kind of going on from there with that kind of momentum you get out of early wins, even though the squad was still settling in. But I think it was more realistic to anticipate there being a bit of a kind of settling in period. And so I kind of think from here, given the strength of the squad, we should really be kind of viewing the potential for the squad as sort of picking up more points per game than his average. Do you know what I mean? Or his average for a team that is challenging towards the top of the division. We ought to be better than most sides chasing from our position, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you look at, I'm going to call them facts, they're not, they're stats, like the XG and the XG against, they're looking pretty good in our favour, aren't they? The XG against is relatively low, the number of goals we're scoring is relatively high, so it has been, you know, that one shot, our first shot that we've conceded in a match, has invariably ended up in the top corner of our goal. for example, hasn't it? So as you say, it's been fine margins.
Do you think to some degree that's to do with the approach a lot of the teams have taken against us? Because a lot of teams are just defending against us, aren't they? You know what I mean? They're not coming out to play much football against us. And then they'll get a set piece and that'll be their first chance or whatever. And then we're not going to have a huge amount of there's not a huge amount of expectancy of opposition teams scoring goals against us, if you see what I mean. That they're not going to create loads of chances in most cases. And of course we're going to get in positions where we can potentially score goals, but we're finding ourselves up against teams that are defending in depth, and it makes it tougher for us to. Having said that, of course, we have scored more goals than anyone else in the division, haven't we, already? So.
Yeah, what's quite reassuring, I was trying to reassure myself, should I say, is that the goals that we have conceded, it's not as if we've been flooding upfield and getting caught on the break and people are breaking on us and scoring goals in that respect. So the goals we are conceding have been either from a set piece or a missed header from central defence. So you could see that the attack's working and the defence is sort of working in a perverse sort of way. So it's not as if we're going to have to rein back the attacking to concentrate on the defending, because the goals that we are conceding aren't really related to us scoring the goals and flooding ourselves up the pitch, if you see what I mean. Anyway.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I was sort of thinking, saying that teams haven't taken the game to us so much, whereas we've, in periods of games, we've invited club teams onto us, I think, do you see what I mean? And they've tended to score in those periods, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Cambridge Saturday. I mean, literally, really, they've done nothing until that first goal, had they? And that was the kind of classic sort of counter-attack, really, wasn't it? As you say, I'm not sure how many goals have been like that. Maybe one of the ones against Morecambe was a bit like that, I think. But but I think we're getting better at the back, aren't we? I think I think that's the key. I think the Christian Walton, I think, looked pretty solid the other night. He didn't really have a whole lot to do, but he had one save to make, which was about the 84th minute, didn't he? Really? And perhaps the back four maybe have a bit more confidence in him than they might have had in Hladky. But again, I think it's one of these things that they're all learning to play with one another, aren't they?
They are. But I think Hladky's been—he looks like nervous as a kitten in the matches, in most of the matches I've seen. And that, and we've all seen the conversations, shall we say, between the centre halves and the goalkeeper. And you can just tell that he doesn't, to my eyes, my untrained eye from a distance, he just doesn't seem to be giving that confidence to the guys who are in front of him. Anyway. let's move on to this weekend. We've done Portsmouth. We won that 4-0. Let's see what we can do at the weekend. And we move on to Fleetwood. This is your chance to shine here, Seb. This is your stage now, my friend. Fleetwood, what do you know? Where are they? How have we done against them in the past, etc.?
Yeah, so as things stand, they're sitting in 20th, so they're not on a great run of form at the minute, which again makes it even more important that we take advantage of it. They've got 13 points, played 12, won 3, drawn 4, lost 5, and they've scored 20 goals and they've conceded 19. The last time out midweek was a 1-0 defeat against Burton, where, to be fair, they did actually play quite well. Burton kind of scraped a bit of a shithouse 1-0 win there. They kind of smashed and grabbed that a little bit. So they did play well, but they're not playing great. Last season, finished 15th. Obviously, we had a 2-0 defeat up there. One of Paul Cook's very early games. And I seem to remember, did he sub like Miles Kenlock after? At some point in the game, Kenlock was getting torn a new one, and I think he took him off and bought Warden, if I remember rightly. And
he wasn't getting torn a new one by Wes Burns, was he?
Yeah, I think he probably was. Yeah,
yeah. And is that the one where Callum Connolly scored a header and was it a long throw? And
that's the one. Thomas, very early Thomas on in his Hurley range, was, I think.
Yeah, Thomas Hurley was shock horror flat footed, I believe.
And then on the last game of the season, obviously beaten 3-1 at home, and Wes Burns scored that goal where he just kept running and running and running and clearly raised a few eyebrows, sat in the technical areas and stuff of the home team. But yeah, so that was last season. Simon Grayson is in charge there at the moment. He replaced Joey Barton last January. Barton left a bit strangely, didn't he? And then turned up at Bristol Rovers, now in League Two. So 15th last season, their peak was the COVID curtailed season when they finished sixth. We won there. I remember I was there, I think, with Rich and, and a couple of the guys. We won there. Sort of must have been November time, probably about this time 2 years ago.
October, November, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jackson followed up a Garbutt free kick, and we suddenly were like, what, 5 points clear and thinking, oh, this League One is so easy. And they did the hands at the end of the game.
We had a game in hand as well, didn't we, at that point as well,
And Jerry Barton had come out pre-match and said, this is the worst Ipswich team of all time. And we thought, you know, we've shut him up now. It's going to be a gentle stroll to the finish line. And then, well, we all know what happens. So, Grayson's played 34 games, won 12, drawn 9, lost 13. So averaging 1.32 points per game. We all know him from the Championship level, you know, Leeds and Preston and Blackpool. And then at Sunderland in that very brief, in the relegation series, he was there for, what, the first 10 games of the season, was it? We battered them 5-2 and he was in the Netflix documentary, but he didn't last there long and got replaced by Chris Cole.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
In terms of the recruitment, they've had 8 arrivals. Whenever me and Rich do these things, every club seems to have had like 8 to 10 arrivals and then 8 to 10 departures. It's just what League One level is, isn't it?
It's the norm, isn't it? It's a churn. The churn of players is just the norm.
Yeah,
so. I think also COVID has impacted on that as well, because of course teams are offering shorter term contracts than they would have been offering a little while ago. So it's got very much like non-league almost, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all one year deals, isn't it? With options in the club's favour if need be. It's not like it used to be, I guess. The key ins for some very strange reason, Joey Garner has swapped Sunny Cyprus for not so Sunny Fleetwood, which, having been to both, is a really strange. I've seen both. It's a very strange decision to me. But then he always liked the Northwest, didn't he? When he was down at us, he always wanted to move back up there to Wigan and stuff. So fair enough. If that's what you like, that's fair enough. He's not really playing for them. He's made 5 sub appearances and yet to score, but we know all about Joey Garner. You know, if they're chasing the game with half an hour, 20 minutes to go, he's going to be thrown on, and the likes of Nsiala and Edmondson are going to have to be properly on their game, because he's going to be all the tricks and all the little, you know, the dark arts, shall we say, of being a striker. He's going to be looking to win those free kicks in and around the box. Anthony Pilkington, I remember Paul Lambert nearly signed him, if I'm right, didn't he? Wasn't he the target before we got Alan Judge for that number 10 role in the January transfer window of the relegation season? I'm sure we nearly got him and he ended up going to Wigan, I think, was the where he went in the end.
I think they offered more money. I think that was basically it. I think, I can't think where he was. Was he at Cardiff at the time still?
Rings a bell. Yeah, I think it rings a bell.
I think he was being released by Cardiff or had been released by Cardiff. And it was, I think, just simply kind of someone offered slightly more money.
It seems to be the sort of name that would appear in a lot of your news items, Phil, for just as a rumour that's been bandied around.
It's one of those that's been linked a lot over the years, isn't it? that's been mentioned a lot. Yeah, I think he was playing in India, wasn't he, until he joined up with Fleetwood, which is but I don't think it worked out terribly well for him there. And he's getting towards the end of his career now. He's a canary, isn't he? A former canary. So he's one who obviously will presumably look to put something over on us. But he's a player. He was a decent championship player in his day, wasn't he?
Yeah, and obviously Lambert identified him as the one to do that number 10 position, didn't he? He was thinking in that position he was playing, he was the one that was going to really look to dictate the play, but obviously we went out and got Alan Judge instead. And then I completely forgot that Harry Wright was there till I was doing some of the research for it. I completely forgot they signed him in the summer. He's only made an appearance in the Pizza Cup so far, but he's there, sort of their reserve goalkeeper. And good to see him snapped up at this level, because he never got an appearance for us, and he was one of those I thought might drift out of the game a little bit, but good to see him at a decent level.
I think he's on loan at Farsley Celtic at the moment, getting some games. I think, which is what he needs, isn't it, really? He didn't. He had a few loan spells here, didn't he, in similar sorts of clubs in non-league. But I think, games is the thing he needs. He must be getting on towards 21, 22 now. So, of course, his father was playing in the Premier League at 17, wasn't he? So, he's... I think he's not the tallest of keepers, is he? I think that's probably going in this era. I think goalkeepers are all about 6'5" now, aren't they? So I think he's a little below that, and so clubs might look at him and think, well, he's not for us, sort of thing. But he needs to go somewhere, play a lot of games, and establish himself, because at the moment he's just seen as this sort of fella who's played a fair amount of under-23s football, isn't he?
I remember Joe always said he was really good with his feet. I've never seen him play personally, but I remember Joe always used to say in the academy games and the under-23 games, he always had really, really good distribution from his feet. He was able to ping a ball out to a fullback really effortlessly, and that was kind of his key power in the game.
Yes, he's a decent footballer, definitely, as a goalkeeper. And of course, that's such a modern part of the goalkeeper's armoury, isn't it? To be a footballer as well as a goalkeeper.
Yeah. Three key outs, rather. Wes Burns, obviously, we all know, came to ourselves. Callum Connolly moved to the Championship and went to Blackpool. That was quite a big loss. We were heavily linked. I remember at the start of the window, I think that was quite close to being done. There were rumours saying, this one's going to get over the line, and for whatever reason, maybe more money up at Blackpool or wanting to play at a higher level, it never crossed the line. But he was always a good player. We signed him as a right back, didn't we, in the 17-18 season? But he was just that good, because he's come from a Premier League academy. He was able to sit in central midfield fairly effortlessly. So he's up at Blackpool now. And they lost Glenn Whelan, so a big experienced player, moved to Bristol Rovers. He followed Joey Barton and went to Bristol Rovers. So they lost a decent chunk of experience there with Connolly and Whelan moving out the door.
Yeah, Connolly, I think Connolly was one that was fairly high up the list, I think, of potential targets. But you wonder how. I don't think it was ever particularly close, but I kind of wonder how early he knew he was going to Blackpool, to be honest. I think as soon as Blackpool, a Championship club, came in for him, I think that was that, wasn't it, really? You're going to want to play in the Championship if you can, once you're sort of... he must be, what, mid-20s now, mustn't he? 25, something like that, I would guess. But he did very well for us, didn't he, I thought, during the span, playing in midfield. And I know Mick McCarthy was a big fan of his.
Yeah, great plan. Obviously, being from that part of the world, I guess he wanted to settle a bit closer to home as well. Maybe it's too warm and sunny down in Suffolk. He's missing the drizzle and the wind that we get up here. So what to expect from Fleetwood? So they are very good at set pieces. They've scored 20 goals, like I said earlier, and 9 of them have been from set pieces. 4 have been direct free kicks from Danny Andrew. So that is a big, big weapon for them. He's done an interview today where he said he's never scored 4 goals in a season, let alone 4 free kicks in the first 3 months. So that's a big worry for us. We need to be on our game and make sure we're not giving away free kicks in and around the area, because his left foot is absolutely lethal. They prefer a shorter playing style, so they're not really a long ball side. They're kind of averaging 300 to 310 short passes per game. To put it in perspective, we average about 375, and they're averaging 68 long passes per game, and we're averaging 90. So not really a long ball side. They are the king of the interceptions away from home with 12.5 per game, and they can be quite niggly and quite foully too, which I guess, when you've got the likes of Garner coming off the bench, does kind of make sense. He likes to put himself about a little bit, averaging 13 fouls a game. They average 47.8 possession, so they're happy to sit back and let sides sort of, you know, they're not going to be ones that are going to look to knock it around and really dictate the play. They will sit back and simply wait and then look to exploit set pieces. Only one clean sheet so far this season, which is obviously quite crucial. You know, the form we're in with the goal scoring, we need to make sure we take full advantage of that. Their defenders are quite big. They've got some six-footers, some 6'1s, some 6'2s, but they are quite static, so they're very, very weak against through ball. So if we can get the likes of Chaplin, the way he's playing, and Macaulay Bond playing on the shoulder of the last man, there's no reason why those through balls can't really do some damage. They've only won once away from home as well, but it was quite a noticeable win. It was a 4-2 victory against Rotherham, away to Rotherham, which obviously made a few people stand up and take note. But apart from that, that's their only win, and they've only won one out of the last five games. So they are there for the taking. It's just, you know, are we able to put them to the sword and really look to build some momentum?
They do score a lot of goals, don't they? They've scored, I appreciate it's Crewe, they scored three at home to Crewe, they scored three away to MK Dons, they scored two away to Sunderland, and as you say, they scored four away to Rotherham. So scoring goals isn't really an issue. I don't think we'll be putting our Blue Monday pot of cash on a 0-0 at the weekend.
No, yeah. Yes. Like, go on, Phil, sorry.
No, you go.
No, just with the it should be a. It's a bit like the MK Dons game. Do you remember we were all saying that could be a bit of a high scoring game. It's got that feel about it as well. I would say, given the form we're in, are we still second to Fulham, I think, in the Football League for goal score. But obviously, we are ropey at the back, and they can score pretty decently. So yeah, I think this might be quite a high scoring game personally.
It's a bit like the Joe Royle era all over again, isn't it? Sort of any week can end up 4-2, can't it, at the moment? Or yeah, I think we're going to have more fours and sixes, aren't we, as the season goes on? Yeah. I think we're going to, yeah. we are the sort of 100 goals. I think we're on for well in excess of that at the moment, aren't we, in the way we're scoring goals.
Don't say things like that in October, for goodness sake. Yeah. Funnily enough, I was talking to a chap, I dropped my car for his MOT earlier, rock and roll, but the guy, one of the guys in the garage, is an Ipswich fan. He's a slightly younger Ipswich fan, but he was just saying that he's now enjoying going to watch games of football, and that's what he said. You know, I can't now wait until the weekend. I actually want to go and watch them. I want to go and see us play. It's entertaining to watch. And you know, he's probably had a few years of his formative years of watching slightly less exciting football, should we say. So yeah, it's just a question of keeping them out at one end, but if you score more than the other team, then happy days. In terms of formations, Seb, what they're a bit here, they're everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, very inconsistent. So 3-5-2 is what they've played most. Three at the back, a variation of three at the back is what they've played most. They've played three at the back six times in total. A variation of sort of 3-5-2 and 3-4-1-2. The last five games, it's been 4-2-3-1 three times, but it's been 3-5-2 in the last two games. So I would assume they will stick to that. It looks like Tom Clark won't be back in the centre of defence, so the back three is likely still to be Hill, Clark and Hill, Johnson and Danny Andrew, and they play wing backs, and they very heavily look to overload the right hand side with the wing backs.
Well, that's interesting, because Portsmouth played three at the back, didn't they? And we really exploited that gap behind their wing backs, didn't we, the weekend? So I'd imagine Paul Cook's probably got his fingers crossed that he'll be up against another 3-5-2 at the weekend, maybe.
Yeah, Danny Andrews is the one that plays the left centre-back, the left of the three. So if Danasian can do what he did on Tuesday night and really look to bomb on and put pressure on him, then hopefully we can get some joy down that side again.
So in terms of their starting 11, you've sort of gone through the back three. Who've they got through the rest of the team?
Well, Jordan Rosita is the sort of the name that we all kind of remember. I remember him very much from Football Manager kind of days. If you were looking for a central midfielder, he'd always be one of my go-to kind of guys. Left the Liverpool Academy to go to Rangers, and he must have caught the eye of Joey Barton. I forgot Joey Barton was at Rangers for a very brief spell, and he sort of took him to Fleetwood on loan, and then he signed him permanently. So he'll be the sitter. I think he missed the last game with injury, but I think he's meant to be back. So he'll be the sitter alongside Jay Matey, who's come through their academy. And then Callum Crumps is their number 10. He's their sort of midfield creator slash attacking player. He's got two goals and three assists so far this season, and he's the one looking to load the ammunition for their star striker, which is Gerard Garner, not Joey Garner, Gerard Garner, who's got five goals from the 12 games so far this season.
Okay, so he's we think that Gerard Garner's good. He isn't he the guy that they've had for a while, and then he
He's had loans.
He's
like
there and everywhere on loan, non-league and all sorts. And he's literally just come back this season and started a house on fire, isn't he?
Yeah, perennial loanee. Went out on loan. He's about 21, 22, I think. Went out on loan, did all the lower league stuff, and then he's been given his chance this year. And yeah, to be fair, he's not looked back so far. He's all five goals have come within the penalty area. So he's a bit of a poacher. He's not great in the air. He's not overly big. He's only won 12 out of 48 aerial duels in the penalty box so far this season. So he's not amazing in the air, but he's a bit of a fox in the box and a bit of a poacher.
So is he your... your Richard Woodward curse?
He's not player of the week. I thought he was too obvious, so I'm going to try and break the curse, hopefully, because Rich's level of accuracy is ridiculous, isn't it? So I'm going to go for the left centre back, Danny Andrews, simply because of his set piece and his delivery threat. So any corners, any free kicks, any direct free kicks, we really need to be on the money, because, like I say, he's got four goals so far this season. He's got three assists, and all four goals have come from set pieces. So he's the man to watch, and let's hope we don't give him too many opportunities on Saturday.
So when the fun stops, and please gamble responsibly, we're looking for a Danny Andrew goal and an Ipswich Town win, yeah?
That'll do, yeah, that's fine, yeah. A nice high-scoring game and a Danny Andrew goal would be great.
Yeah, you don't think sort of 4-1s and things, they're not really a surprise in this division, are they? Sort of, there's a lot of goals in this division, aren't there, at the moment? And I think that's not an unlikely scoreline at all.
Okay, right. Hold on to your hats, everybody. It's Seb's fact of the week. Now, here's the thing I need to pick up with you, mate. That photo of you there must be about 25 years ago, mustn't it?
Yeah, much thinner, much less wrinkles, much more hair. Yeah, I think that's from one when me and Rich were going out in Birmingham in the mid-2000s on nights out at uni and stuff. So I'm not entirely sure where he's got it from, but it was a much less stressful time.
It's like the same one that Rich has got on his player to watch. He's got like shoulder-length hair, I think, and like a clean shave. He's like about 12 years old in it.
That's from the, there was a courtyard in the old town in Dusseldorf during the Mick McCarthy pre-season friendly. It was, that was taken there. We had a great and away trip there. And yeah, we've both not aged great. So, right. The fact of the week this week, Fleetwood Town hold a Guinness World Record. They've got an ex-player called Nathan Pond, who played for them between 2003 and 2018. And because he played in seven different divisions for the club across the course of six promotions, he was recognized by Guinness as the world record for appearing in the most different divisions with a single football club.
That's quite something, isn't it?
I thought that, yeah. So he was there 15 years, six promotions, seven different leagues. I think it was about 420, 430 odd appearances. So, yeah, nice to see him recognised by the Guinness World Records.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, that's really going from the verge of park football to league football, isn't it? With one club. It's quite remarkable, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty. So he was a small pond in a big...
Oh, right.
By the time you finished, yeah? Nice. Okay, it's that time of the show, everybody. The time you've all been waiting for. Cue Rich's horrible intro music. Right, room 101. Now, let's bring this up just because, you know, Rich told me to. I've spoken to Seb about this in the green room, and we're not entirely sure that this league table should be structured exactly how it is currently. There needs to be some sort of points per game rating going on here, rather than purely how many wins, because, you know, this is the realm of Rich and Seb. You know, Phil and I are merely interlopers on this. We're cuckoos this weekend, so, you know, being a hundred percent merchant myself, you know, I'm more than happy to go by a points per game rating. And also, actually, I've got another slight bone to pick about this, because it needs to be some sort of handicap in place here, because not only have we now got a three-way split rather than a 50-50 split, we've got Phil, who's got his own fan base out there swaying the vote. So I think
They'll just vote against me.
If Seb and I get anywhere close to him, I think it's going to be a moral victory. If nothing, we need another column in the table for a moral victory. So last week, Seb won with his international games against Minnow Nations, I believe that was. And Rich was quite confident in his, but no, he got turned over. So we'll put this out to the vote alongside the link to the audio and the video later on. Which one of you two guys? I'm gonna go last because mine's probably the weakest. So which one of you two guys want to go first?
Phil being the guest, go first.
Absolutely, go on, Phil. What you?
Okay. I certainly agree with a lot of those. By the stuttering penalties, I think that's. I think everybody can get behind that, except the players who do it. I think, aren't they? I don't know what goes through their minds, but this is more of a kind of sort of journalistic thing, I suppose. People referring to league matches as ties, which I think is something that's crept in recent years. A tie is a cup game, yeah? You know what I mean? Cup game, it's a cup tie. It's a third round cup tie. It's not, you know, Ipswich versus...
A third round cup tie.
Yeah. Well, I told you it's a few years ago. You know, it's Ipswich v Fleetwood is not a tie. You keep sort of seeing this being referred to. And I was talking to Rich about this, and he wondered whether it came out of American sport, whether they refer to sort of league games as ties. I don't really know a lot about American sport, so I don't know whether that's the case. But it is, yeah, something that's creeping in. It's sort of, you know, you're sort of typing away or editing something and someone sort of writes that. And no. But cup ties, league matches, cup ties. That's mine. It's probably as weak as yours.
Well, that remains to be seen, mate. Seb, what you got?
I'm going to go for corners. Now, I'm not crazy like Rich and trying to completely... Not trying to completely rewrite the rule book like he did last week. I'm going for corners where the players have this newfound... Well, it's not new. It's been around for about 2 or 3 years. They have this weird thing where they'll put the ball barely touching the quadrant to take the corner. And I just don't really understand why. What difference does it make? I mean... Corners are, you know, the conversion rate from a corner is so low anyway. What difference does it make? That extra millimeter, 2 millimeters, you know, the linesman stands there and checks and makes sure the tiniest bit of it is touching the paint on the pitch. And I have never, ever understood that one. You know, they're professional footballers. They can whip a ball into the middle. And why does that extra some can hit the first man straight away. But what difference does that extra millimeter make? I don't see the point of it. So that's mine this week.
It's just that horrible just gaining an advantage, isn't it? I just want to gain an advantage. It's like it's a free kick. All right, I'll take the free kick. Let me just backspin it over there a little bit, gain myself an extra foot, just because I want to do it to show that I'm gaining an advantage.
The only thing I would say is sort of Sunday morning football, you take a corner and there's a great sort of rut where the line is, do you know what I mean? And the ball going on the line, it makes it harder to take the corner, so you move it forward a little bit. But on the modern pitches at EFL and Premier League level and whatever, as you say, it's just ludicrous.
Pointless, waste of time.
The thing is, what I remember from playing Sunday morning football is that, going off on a tangent about quadrants, the quadrants were tiny. You could barely fit the ball or you actually might kick the corner flag. Whereas having been on a professional pitch, they're bloody massive, these quadrants. They must be a good yard as the arc goes, sort of thing. So it's not as if they need to, they've got in danger of, well, famously Matt Letitiae kicked the corner flag, didn't he, up the North Stand?
Yeah,
I remember that.
In the Premier League, yeah.
Okay, right. My one, this is the one to vote for everyone, is part of... being a football fan and part of the agreement that you have when buying a ticket to watch your team play is that things may not go quite as you plan. You may not always go away to Portsmouth and win 4-0. You may occasionally go to Accrington Stanley and lose, get beaten up. But asking for a refund for tickets and travel following away performance is my room 101. Yeah, you know the deal when you go and watch a football match. It may not end well for you, but the gall of taking to social media and asking for a refund for your match ticket or your travel to an away game to some, I'm going to upset certain people here, northern hellhole is my room 101 for this week. Yeah, you go into the match, you go and be your eyes open, you suck it up, you go home, you moan about it, you don't ask your money back.
That's a great shout. Yeah, that's one that gets on my nerves as well. You know, the way they just come out and the desperation and the pleas on social media and stuff. It's just embarrassing, isn't it? You know, suck it up. You know what you've signed up for. It's part of the gig.
Yeah, I agree with you. You've got to take the crunchy with the smooth.
Unfortunately, we don't all get to sit in, you know, the press box and eat the hospitality on offer, and the cheese and onion pasty. Some of us have to stand out in the wind and the rain at Accrington. But by the by, SA is what we sign up for. So those will be our three for the week. We'll get those out on social media, and you can all have a vote on them. I say, bear in mind, we'll put the algorithm together to make sure Phil's family doesn't sway the vote too much. But that's our room 101. Okay, and I think that's pretty much us. We just nipped over the 50 minute mark, so I'm going to get my wrist slapped by Richard for overrunning by 5 or 6 minutes. So I'll wrap this up relatively soon. Again, if you want to, please head to the Greyhound for your pre-match and post-match beers. You never know which of the Blue Monday team you'll bump into. Well, actually, you pretty much do know which of the Blue Monday team you'll be bumping into. I think this weekend, I think Rich and Dave and Mikey are going to meet up for a pre-match beer, actually, before the game. So, please go and see the guys at the Greyhound. Give them your custom and say hello from us. The flagship show will be out on Monday. It's being recorded Sunday night, I believe. Mikey, Rich and Dave are penciled in for that. All of our details in terms of our social bits and pieces are on our website. We now have a website. I will quickly stick it up at the bottom here. BlueMondayITFC.co.uk. You can contact us and go get links to the latest podcasts and bits and pieces on that. And of course, please continue to use TWTD for all of your Ipswich Town news and message board, forum, fun and games. Keep Phil on his toes, a mediation perspective. So looking forward to the game tomorrow, guys. I'll ask you, rather than any last words, I'll just ask you for a prediction, actually. Seb, what are you looking for tomorrow?
Well, like we say, we think there might be goals in this game, so I'm going to go for a 3-1 to Ipswich. Pretty confident with this one, but I have said that on this show in the past, and it's not worked out well. But yeah, 3-1 to Town for me.
I'm similarly confident. I think the way we played on Tuesday, I think if we play anything like that, I think we'll have more than enough to. I think the confidence we're starting to show and the self belief we're starting to show, and I think now we're probably losing that Achilles heel, as Paul Cook referred to it, of conceding goals. Well, touch wood. I think the 4-1 we alluded to earlier, I think that all that could well be the scoreline.
Wowzers! It's just nice to see, isn't it? That when you can just say Phil, that the confidence in the team and the when things click and we score goals like the Wes Burns goal on Tuesday. I thought it was just a lovely goal, just nice play, just inside the fullback or the wing back, and that first time cross and the first time shot. And when the players all come together, you can just see that they think, yep, this is now starting to click a little bit, isn't it? So, yeah, fingers crossed. I'm going to be equally as optimistic. Bloody hell, what are we doing here, fellas? We're going all in. I'll go to Seb, actually. I'm going to go 3-1, and it'll be your man, the left centre half, will score that consolation for them. Thank you very much, fellas. I say thank you for joining us, Phil. Thank you very much. Good to see you, mate. Well, we'll hopefully have some news on some new interviews in the not too distant future. They're being lined up and arranged as we speak. Seb, good to see you, my friend. Thanks very much. And if we don't see you before, we'll no doubt see you at this point next week. So that's it for me. So last words, I don't know, really. Two wins on the trot. It's not too much to ask, is it?
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.